Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-man, no rain from the track when we unite and spit, this isn't A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-man, no rain.
And now it's the Mike and JD show, and I am your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined as always by JD, by God Oliva. How you doing, JD?
It's been a week. Not bad, actually. A lot of interesting personal stuff going on. All good, man. All really, really good stuff. So it's been a tough year. I've been talking to you about stuff, like, you know, with my dad going and doing therapy and stuff. And I gotta be honest with you, man, like, this is the last, like, 6-7 weeks have been like some of the best 6 or 7 weeks that I think I've had in a long time. So I'm feeling very good about stuff right now, man. How are you?
That's good. I too am doing good. I'm a little tired today, even though it's only 5:45 PM where I'm at. So I don't think I have the right to complain about being tired, but I did have an early wake up call this morning. Hey, before I get into the story, everybody hit the like button. Throw down a comment and make sure you subscribe to this channel and help us defeat the algorithm. When you guys do that, it actually sends a signal to YouTube that we got some cool stuff going on over here, and invites everybody else to show up and hang out with us. And we would greatly appreciate that. And then if you are so inclined, head over to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. We always have a ton of content going up. And if you're interested in JD and I breaking down our entire Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame ballot, we did that. We went by category, and we had a good argument. So me and JD kind of got in my face a little bit. So that was good. It's good.
Yeah,
good for
fucking radio. Asshole.
Yeah, as per usual. So that's good. So please head over there. I did clip some of this stuff. So some of the stuff's already on YouTube, but the entire video and audio is over on the Patreon. So please go over to patreon.com/JDShow.
Who do we argue about? I forget.
The Hardy Boys. No, not that one. The Young Bucks and Moxley.
That's right. We did.
I voted the Young Bucks and you didn't. And you voted for Moxley and I didn't. And so now we're like bitter enemies.
Yeah, I hate you. I fucking hate you. It's so weird. That's what we do, right? We hate people who don't vote like us, right?
Isn't that how that's supposed to go? By the way, I thought I had one of my best Facebook posts ever.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. No, I said, look, I don't hate anybody for not voting the same way I do. I only hate people for not liking the same football team. And I got a good laugh out of everybody because I felt like some people needed to laugh and heal. So,
Hey man, for the record, John Muse just texted me. He voted for John Moxley. So
he did, but he also voted for the Young Bucks.
So, I mean, like, so if we ever get him back on the show, we can do a three-way yell at each other.
Yeah.
I have to submit my ballot. I haven't submitted my ballot yet because
it's due today or no. It's due tomorrow.
Tomorrow. I texted Jeremy. Yeah. We're good. Okay. I'm good. I'm fine. Yeah. Fine.
But I'm doing great. I also have had kind of a good week. So I've had a really huge company kind of wanting my services outside of the military. I'm over 20 years now. I'm still like under contract, but I can – I can retire at any moment now that I'm over 20 years. I mean, it would have to go through an approval process. I think that'll get approved. Well, I've been talking with this company since July, and I talked to them earlier this week. So if you guys notice, my background is no longer my son's dresser and like diapers above the head and all that stuff. It's actually like a normal looking background. I have my degrees behind me and my rank, and I have some other cool stuff. I'm trying to have like a professional looking background because I did 4 webcam interviews this week and 3 of them today. And because they're on the East Coast and I'm in Hawaii, my first interview was at 6 o'clock this morning. So I actually had to get up at 4:30 a.m. Hit some coffee up and then put on a show for these people, and hopefully they will pick me. Mike Gilbert is all WWE ID. Well, the company is on the East Coast, and it is, but this is a Fortune 500 company. I don't think TKO is Fortune 500. I don't believe that they are. They can't be.
I have no idea. But TJ, no. I don't know.
No, this company is actually like probably Fortune 100. It's a huge corporation. So we'll see.
You going to work for Enron?
Probably BlackRock, you know, probably do that. Like, just go to the dark side.
Yeah. What was that company that, Oh, shoot. The paramilitary company that like Blackwater, is that what it was Blackwater? Called?
Yeah. You know, it's so funny. When I was in Afghanistan the first time, as I had heard of Blackwater, but I'd never actually seen like anybody that worked for Blackwater. And then I worked for the hospital for the trauma center there. And we had a local national there, like Afghani person, mm-hmm. Was kind of helping out our military, and they got caught in the crossfire and they got hurt pretty bad. So they flew them to our hospital and our medics took care of them, did surgery, all that stuff, took good care of them and nursed him back to health. And then I had to escort him back to his town. Right. And I was like, well, how do I do that? Because he apparently lived like 3 hours away by car. I was like, you guys want me to convoy over to this guy's town? And they go, no, you're going to have to get on a plane. I was like, okay, well, that's good. And then you just drop him off at the base that's nearest his town. I was like, okay, that's good. So we get to the flight line. I'm like escorted by an ambulance to the flight line, right? We get to it. It's a little twin engine plane, and it has like a dude there standing at the plane with a full beard, like a more masculine beard than I have right now. He's got jacked to the gills, sunglasses, got a tan hat, and he's got an M4 rifle strapped to his chest. He's got an M9 on his side. And he goes, are you Gilbert? And I go, yep. And he said the guy's name. I was like, yep, that's us. And then we get on the plane, and then I get on the plane, and it's like, it had to all be CIA guys. And then a guy comes on, and he is the flight attendant. And there was a pilot. And they all look like suspicious as hell. And the pilot and the flight attendant were both like these older dudes. And they were Blackwater contracted employees. One was a pilot, one's a flight attendant. And then the rest on the plane is like, they had to be like either special forces or CIA dudes. And I'm just like this idiot senior airman. I don't even know if my M16 rifle works or not. And I'm on there with these guys. And I'm like, I hope if this goes down, these guys will protect me, because I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
I love Mike Gilbert stories, man. They're the best. Awesome. I make a Blackwater joke and he's like, oh, I got a guy.
I've actually flown on a Blackwater plane in Afghanistan to a Ford operating base called Salerno.
That's a cool story, man.
Yeah. It's so funny. The way we had to get back is, so Salerno is a blackout base. And what that means is like at nighttime, because you're kind of at you're at a disadvantage because of the hills that are around it. Mm-hmm. You can't have any lights going on at nighttime. So all the lights are out. You can't see anything at night. You have to wear a little red light on your helmet. And when you go outside of your tent, you have to have a little red light on your helmet, so that way you can actually see in front of you. And so I have to go, and I'm pretty sure they was like just army cats. I had to go line up with those guys. And then we go to the flight line. There's a plane on the flight line, but because it's blackout, we can't hear it. Its engine is, we can hear it, but we can't see it. Its engine is running, but we cannot see it because it's so dark out there. And so, this was like a huge kind of a cargo plane. On the back of the plane was 2 Humvees. And so we had to like run as soon as they let the back of the plane go down and we could actually see a light, we all had to in formation run to the light and hope that nobody sniped us on the way there. So it was pretty wild, man. But yeah, so anyway, that was my Blackwater story.
I can't follow that up. Fuck. Okay, you win.
Yeah, but I don't know that I'm retiring, but if I do get this gig and everybody approves of retirement, I very well could be a civilian sooner rather than later. And I'll be living on the East Coast, which would actually make our podcast probably a lot better because we'll be in a similar time zone for the first time since we started.
Ever. Like, yeah. We probably should have told people we were going an hour earlier than normal, which I appreciate, by the way.
Yeah, I think we should go now that our time zones are like, because Hawaii is not a Nazi state. We don't do daylight savings time. So what everybody else changes, we don't. So JD and I went from 5 hours apart to where we're 4 hours apart. So it's still the same time for me, but it's actually an hour earlier for JD.
Can you? Okay. So yeah, you're not a Nazi state. What I want to know is what the hell kind of state Indiana is. Indiana bobs and weaves from the Eastern and Central time zone. When I mean bobs and weaves, I mean like part of the far western corner of Indiana is Eastern time zone. And then you keep going east and it turns into the Central time zone. Wait. And then it goes back to the Eastern time zone. I'm dead serious, man.
Is that just how like those, what do they call those lines that are drawn up on the globe?
I don't know, like the longitudinal lines?
I guess. Maybe I that's
no
what
idea.
It is.
I have no idea.
I'm not Magellan. I have no idea.
Well, Indiana's the armpit of America. So the fact that it doesn't work out, you know, it makes perfect sense because Indiana is a hellhole and it should be stricken from the face of the planet.
Yeah. All right. Before we get into our topics, let's go ahead and get to the chat. Our boy Dre says, is he saying live the fuck up or live the, I don't know what he's saying.
I don't know.
He said he's got TNA in the background and y'all up on the phone. Food on the way. Let's get it. All right.
Someone's living good.
Guys in Chicago.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Sure. Aya says y'all are live early. Yeah. Yeah. We didn't tell anybody. But I'm glad you guys joined us. Hopefully this is a more advantageous time and we'll try to get it maybe nailed down a little bit better. Maybe we'll try to go maybe at the top of the hour. So maybe like, no, just, no. Okay.
Top of the hour stuff about here.
Okay.
That's right. We'll workshop this.
Top of the hour to the right. So 30 minutes early as opposed to an hour early.
Yeah, that could work. Okay.
We'll figure it out. We'll workshop it.
King of the North says, JD, friend, I hope your week has been great. It's been all right. Yeah. There's been ups and downs. Life is ups, life is downs.
Yeah. King says, JD didn't vote for the Bucks. Ban that guy. Yeah. We had a whole discussion about it. The video's up on YouTube. JD,
highly recommend it.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. But guys, you know, I'll be honest, not a ton of news to talk about. And so I was just kind of scouring the internet looking for the latest news. And the top story of the day is ratings talk. I was like, God damn it.
I don't want to do it. It doesn't fucking matter. Like, we're not going to talk about it. Especially,
I know.
It's stupid.
But I do think it is a little bit relevant and maybe we can add some context to the show. So let me get into it. AEW versus NXT. The Wednesday night war returns for the first time in a while. NXT actually moved their night from Tuesday night to Wednesday night because they did not want to go head to head with the election coverage. They went head to head like a month ago, I think. AEW moved to Tuesday because of baseball, so they ended up going on Tuesday. Now, that didn't work out for AEW. Well, this one didn't work out for AEW either, NXT coming on their night. So NXT averaged 619,000 viewers, a 5% increase from the prior week. They came from they emanated from the 2300 arena in Philadelphia, and they brought back RVD, Dudley Boys, Rhino, and others. Actually, Dawn Marie was there, and Francine was in the crowd, so it was like an ECW nostalgia show. So they went all out with washed up, you know, over 50-year-olds. And it worked out for them, believe it or not. I didn't think it was actually going to work out for them. I thought that NXT moving to Wednesday, not in their time slot, their usual time slot, would actually not do great for them, but actually succeeded there. AEW Dynamite experienced a dip, averaging only 523,000 viewers, a 17% decrease and a low point since June. NXT scored a 0.17 in the demo, while Dynamite dropped to a 0.16. So actually pretty close in the demo.
So not fair. That's actually not fair, Mike. I mean, you're talking broadcast cable. Like those are yeah. Those are incomparable numbers because I believe NXT is now available in 6 or 7 million more households across the country than Dynamite is. I mean, like it's so easy for us to do this, and I think we're above the Alfred Canoas of the world.
Yeah, you know, and that's why I wanted to bring context to it. Yeah. I wanted to have the discussion on the show.
I mean, it just doesn't. I mean, granted, it definitely just took a chunk out of Dynamite. WWE is a hotter product. I mentioned that I've stopped listening to Wrestling Observer Live, and because I just cannot listen to Brian Alvarez review NXT 4 times a week.
I can't
do it.
I listen to Wrestling Observer Radio, but I stopped with Wrestling Observer Live a long time ago.
Yeah,
unless he has like a guest on that I'm interested in.
Like listening to Brian talk about NXT incessantly just makes me hate wrestling. Like, because he can't just review it. He has to review it multiple times a week across multiple platforms. It's just like, I can't do this anymore. I don't understand how a grown man enjoys watching NXT personally. But I think that it's not fair to compare the shows when the demographics are so different as compared to like reach. Yeah. You know, it's like we talk about TNA all the time. Like people say, oh, TNA numbers suck. And it's like, yeah, but where's access available? Like
nobody has the channel.
Right. I mean, like, so you can't compare anything. So then these are like definitely took a chunk out of it. Yeah. Not a huge chunk compared to what they've been doing, but a sizable chunk. It's just, I don't know.
Well, I think that's the discussion. I think that, NXT, I didn't think that NXT would be able to take a sizable chunk out of their audience because I just feel like they're two completely different audiences. At least that was my assumption.
Wrestling fans like wrestling. Like there are people that watch AEW that also watch WWE, but they're going to choose WWE first. This is why that's funny. Go ahead.
No, I think that was kind of the ultimate point of this. It hasn't always been that way. It is that way right now. Mm-hmm. You know, a WWE logo on the front of the TV show. It doesn't really matter what it is. If they're going head to head with AEW, I think the people that watch both are going to choose WWE. And I'm like, that makes no sense to me, but that just appears to be the case.
Hotter product.
Yeah.
Hotter product. Yeah. I was listening to the Between the Sheets Patreon today, and Bix and Zellner were talking about Vince Russo jumping to WCW is the topic. And they had a really interesting discussion about, and it reminded me of some topics that we've talked about over the years about how to be a challenger brand and how to exist outside. You know, when you have a really popular A product, how does a B product exist? Right? Like, how do you, and at the time the fans were saying they wanted WCW to be more like WWF, and Russo tried and it didn't work. It was a complete and total failure. So we've talked about this before. When WWF is really successful, the idea of chasing them and trying to be like their show doesn't invite new people to come over.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. None of this has been proven. Like, all it does is isolate your fans. And Zellner was kind of like, well, you had to get more fans involved. And it's like, did you? Like, because all you did was wind up pushing away all your fans that really cared.
Yeah.
Right? It's the new Coke argument.
Yeah, you know what AEW did really effectively? They made a lot of new fans in the beginning, right? They took a lot of the disaffected fans that were kind of sick of the machine, and then they brought over the ROH and the New Japan fans. But then there was just like this whole other subset of fans that just that live on the internet, and they brought those fans over too. And then they got onto TNT and TBS, and they created new fans. And it seems like that is no longer happening. Like, there's so many that are watching both right now. And when you watch AEW, they opened up with a WWE act under a different name. Now, I'll be honest, I think the Hurt Syndicate's kind of cool. I was not like one of those guys that thought that they should bring them over, because I was like, it's just another mid-card WWE act. Although at one point, Bobby Lashley was a main eventer. He just hasn't been in a while. But the perception is that you got these guys, three of them that are pushing 50 that were on WWE TV for a long time. And you're the challenger brand, but when you're a WWE fan, you watch them, it's like, oh, it's just, they're just doing WWE stuff. But it's on TBS now, but I have the WWE at home already. I'll just watch that. And so they're like, I'll go ahead and check it out.
That's exactly what it is. Like when you have WWE, you have to go out of your way to be dramatically different. And we've talked about that ad nauseum on this show. And every time it seems like Tony does, he pulls back. Right. I like the Death Riders thing. I think that's pretty good. It's very NWO inspired. I want them to keep trying to be something different and not like I need guys like Will Washington to tell everybody else who comes from WWE to shut the fuck up and stop trying to do stuff Vince did. Right. Well, let's see a different presentation of professional wrestling in 2024. Let's not just try to be exactly what Raw was in 1998. Right. Let's do something different. And the more you try to be like them, the less interesting you are. And when they weren't trying to be like WWE is when people cared. Right. And then, you know, we had to do kangaroo kicks and stuff like that. And I don't want to litigate stuff from a year ago, but like, that's what hurt the company.
It appears Adam Cole has not recovered from that because he's struggling a little bit back from injury to connect with the audience. It seems
a guy who never struggled to connect with the audience. Yeah. In his career, say what you want about Adam Cole, but he never had a hard time connecting with the audience. But Max had to play out his Stone Cold Steve Austin masturbatory fantasy, and people want to blame Tony all he wants, but that was Max's dream. This was Max Friedman's dream of what a babyface could be like, and they've trying to retcon it, and they're doing as good a work as they can trying to retcon it. The problem was a year ago the program was total shit, and now it's not. But I mean, now I'm ambivalent toward it, so it's harder to watch. Because you just made me not care, right?
Yeah, well, it's like you're watching a movie. It's like you're watching a movie and all of a sudden the bad guy becomes a good guy and the good guy becomes a bad guy. Nobody really understands why, but you didn't really like the feud in the first place. And so now mm-hmm. they're just trying to do it reimagined. It's like, really, they should have just moved on completely and never even acknowledged that it happened because it just doesn't make sense. They should have paired mm-hmm. Max up with somebody else. But I think he's just trying to like – a lot of people – don't like to fail, and so they like to prove a lot of people wrong. And so it's like, hey, this didn't work. Well, you know, I'm gonna make it work. I'm gonna prove everybody wrong. And they're just trying to, you know, and it might look they're probably gonna have a really good match. They're very good wrestlers.
Yeah, I'm sure the match will be fine. I think Tony sometimes spends too much stop me if you heard this before. I think Tony spends too much time on Twitter, and I think he spends too much time listening to his critics. And not enough time just trying to do something different. I think that he's gotten in his own way too much the last couple of years. And I think he has the wrong, I don't think there's anybody in that company that can really shake things up creatively to the point where just doing something different. You know, I just, I don't know, man. I don't hate it, but I really, like I said, week after week, I just feel myself becoming more and more blasé about what I see there. And I'm never gonna watch WWE, so.
AEW is still pretty good. Like Dynamite is still a really good show. I gotta be honest, I did not get a chance to watch the show last night because I'll try to watch like Wednesday night after the wife and kid go to bed. But last night I was the one that put the kid down and like she didn't fall asleep till 9 and I fell asleep at 9 and then I had to be up at 4:30. So I woke up at 4:30. So typically I would watch it in the morning before everybody wakes up but I had those job interviews. So I still have not been able to watch it, but from what everybody is saying, it's still like, it was still very good.
I have wrestling practice last night. So usually I'll watch the replay on TNT, the TNT app. And, I was up late on Tuesday night watching cable news. So I just didn't have it last night.
I did see a funny joke, like after the results came out and they got a thorough drumming by NXT, someone said they really need to just do some introspection and take a deep dive and figure out what they're doing wrong. And then somebody commented, it's like, oh my God, AEW's become the Democratic Party.
My God, you just summed up my life in a single sentence. 100%.
Yeah, it's like they're out of touch with their base. Yeah, uh-huh. I would say that's the case.
Yeah,
clearly. And we're not going to do political talk here. Well, there might be a topic that we have to get into.
Hey, we can make fun of our own side if we can't do that. What good left is there?
Yeah, I enjoyed the memes in 2016, even though I was really salty about that one. This year's memes are still pretty good, but I'm not as salty because I kind of like almost saw it coming. I was trying to will it, but I kind of
Like, we've been talking about this for months. Like, we were like, we've both been like, dude, there's no way. Like, I think we gave ourselves the hopium a little bit, but it was at the same time we're both like,
A couple hours into that, I was like, that's all she wrote, folks.
Michelle texts me. She's like, how's it looking? I'm like, Matt's there, but
let's see. Oh, here's an interesting story. I wish I had my tinfoil hat, but I believe we got King of the North in the chat. King, I want you to sound off on this deal, because I think he has his tinfoil hat on too. There's a shakeup in the WWE production or creative or whatever we want to call it. In an unexpected development, WWE stalwarts Bruce Pritchard and Michael P.S. Hayes have temporarily stepped away from their creative roles. According to the Wrestling Observer newsletter, Pritchard, who currently serves as WWE's executive director, has been with the company off and on since 1987. Is known for his backstage influence, blah, blah, blah. His absence is due to a family emergency. Michael Hayes, on the other hand, another WWE legend, former Fabulous Freebird, and a manager of the Hardy Boys. That's a deep cut. Not a lot of people remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was so funny. If you go back and look at the old videos of Michael Hayes with the Hardy Boys, he looks like he's 70. He's like 36 there.
I know. He's younger than both of us. And he looks terrible. Being a Freebird is hard on the body.
It is. Yeah. Like whiskey and cocaine will do that to you.
Yeah.
Oof. But he stepped down temporarily for personal reasons. And so, you know, they got this whole big lawsuit going on with the Ring Boy scandal. Now, Michael Hayes didn't come into way afterwards, but Bruce Pritchard was there in 1987. And certainly, no, he's met Mill Phillips. Not only that, they got the whole scandal going on with Janelle Grant. Happening, multiple lawsuits, multiple allegations, and all of a sudden the WWE's two of their top lieutenants are taking a sabbatical. Should we read into this any more than it is, or is it exactly as they say it is?
Mike, I mean, I can't say for sure, but I'm pretty sure that I mean, like, you can't say for sure. I mean, I don't know what else to say about it. I mean, like, it's pretty obvious that TKO is probably kind of calling a lot of the Vince guys.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is a good thing. They should.
It is a good thing.
Like, it should be not to this extent. Guys, I'm going to make a joke and a reference to a movie. I don't exactly want this to happen, but it should be like that scene in Goodfellas where Robert De Niro, what's Robert De Niro's, he's the Irishman. What's his, no, he's not Irish. He's
Italian.
What's his name in that movie though?
I don't remember.
I can't remember his name. Henry Hill and Jimmy something. I can't remember. But you know, they did the Lufthansa heist, and all the people that were part of it wanted their money. And one by one, you know, like Frankie Carbone ends up in a freezer, and like this other dude and his wife are like just dead in their car in a back alley somewhere. Like they're just kind of like slowly but surely, one by one, they're starting to get rid of people.
Well, it's like to use another mafioso movie, it's like that scene in The Godfather. It was one of my favorite scenes in movie history, where Michael Corleone is taking over the family, and they intersperse the scene with Michael's son, Michael Jr., getting his communion or getting his baptism, and they cut it with him taking enacting vengeance on all his father's enemies. One of like the greatest cross-cutting montages in history. Same concept.
Yeah, same cause. I love that scene in Goodfellas. Oh, by the way, speaking of mafia movies, I'm watching a documentary on Max about The Sopranos, specifically about their writer director David Chase. Really good. Yeah, it's really good. I just finished the episode where spoiler: James Gandolfini dies. But Io, look at you coming through in the clutch. He played Jimmy Conway. That is true. He played Jimmy Conway.
Irish mafia. Yes.
Irish mafioso. There in New York, tied to the Goodfellas. I guess the book was called The Wise Guys, but the movie was Goodfellas, directed by one Martin Scorsese. But the Max documentary on The Sopranos is actually really good.
What's it called?
I don't remember, but I'm like actively watching it right now. But off the top of my head, I can't remember off the top of my head what it is. I'm sure Io will correct us. That's his deal.
So I can't remember Henry Hill, right? That's the name of
Henry Hill.
So Henry, the real life Henry Hill, does an interview for with the husband and wife team, and it's Nicholas Paligi, the guy who writes Goodfellas, and his wife, whose name escapes me right now. And they both took their notes and they splintered off and made different things. Nicholas Paligi wrote Goodfellas, and she wrote My Blue Heaven.
Really?
Yeah.
So oh my God.
If you, it's funny, if you watch My Blue Heaven, knowing that it totally plays like a sequel to Goodfellas, like Henry Hill goes into witness protection, and it's Nora Ephron. That's who it is. I think now I'm having second guesses, but I mean, like, yeah, it's their husband and wife writing team. They had the same interview, took the same notes, and they wrote completely different stories out of it with the same information. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I have to go rewatch that movie. I've seen Goodfellas probably 1,000 times since I'm like 12.
One of the greatest movies ever made. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But Henry Hill used to do the Howard Stern show all the time. And he actually would show up in New York City and do Howard like in person. And Howard's like, aren't you afraid? Like, you're still in Witsec. He's like, not anymore. It's like, you're going to get killed. And he would actually have like mob guys call in on the show saying they're going to kill him. Pretty good. Like, Howard ruled in the 90s, man. Like,
sure, that did. Show was
just endlessly entertaining.
Henry Hill, man, he was a hell of a story, but what a character. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah. What a character. Oh, but back to the story at hand. Oh, yeah. So yeah, King here, he says the timing is just too on the nose. And I mean, could it be exactly what they say it is? There's a chance, right? So you're telling me there's a chance. Yes. Telling you there's a chance. But tinfoil hat Mike, that has been watching pro wrestling for over 35 years, that has been like waist deep on the inside of like insider publications since 1997, would say that there's got to be something more to the story. I think it's a very real possibility neither of those guys come back, or maybe they get cleared somehow and they come back, cleared of either their family emergency or the personal reason for taking leave, or cleared for other reasons, and then they come back. I don't know. But it just seems a bit fishy that they would be taking a sabbatical at this time.
If it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck and it's got big fucking feathers, I think it's pretty safe to point out that it's a duck.
Yeah. Or in this case, the gobbledygooker.
Oh, that's good. I wish I'd have thought of that. Doot, doot, doot.
Doot, 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 doot. That's pretty funny. We have a guys in the chat. Why don't you guys fire off some questions? I have a couple more stories that we can get to, but fire off some questions. If you got any, yeah, it's kind of a slow news week. So like, if you got anything you want us to talk about, let's get to it. But Malakai Black addresses AEW rumors. It was a hot topic yesterday all over X and Twitter and all that stuff. He actually, for some reason, he's still on Tumblr. Like, you remember that website, Tumblr? The picture
Tumblr's
website?
Still a thing? I didn't even know that.
He actually responded to someone saying that he was retiring on Tumblr. Weird. But anyway, following AEW Dynamite's match where Malakai Black lost Adam Cole, speculation about his future intensified. Fans interpreted the post-match moment where Cole thanked Black, offered a handshake, and invited a crowd ovation as a possible farewell. It was a bit dramatic for just like a random fucking match, by the way.
They did it last week, though, too, with Buddy Matthews, who just resigned.
Yeah, like, what? Yeah, it's weird, but with Malakai Black, when he loses, it turns into the fucking, Gone with the Wind.
Well, to be fair, he puts his shoulders on the mat so infrequently that every time he does lose, people are like, this has got to be the end. He's gone.
Yeah. Black quickly debunked these rumors, posting a video on his Instagram stories to clarify that he's neither injured nor retiring nor leaving AEW. In the video, Black acknowledged that the rumors are frequently circulated after his matches and confirmed that he hasn't been injured in over 3 years. He also took the opportunity to reassure fans that he's fully committed to AEW. Well, I don't know about that one. Black's statement dismisses retirement talk, emphasizing that if he were to retire, he would announce it himself. Black's career has had past setbacks due to back injuries, but with his health intact, he plans to continue leading the House of Black. This is according to one Malakai Black. Wrestlers typically don't lie about when they're leaving a company, do they?
Never. Never. A wrestler lie? Like, get out of here, man. Although, to be fair, it's not the first time Malakai Black has posted a video saying he's not leaving AEW, and he has not, in fact, left AEW.
That is true. He has not lied about leaving AEW yet.
Yet. Still time on the clock. It could
very well end up that way. I don't know what's going on with this guy, though. I think I'm pretty sure I saw somewhere, maybe it was Fightful Select, They said that his contract is believed that his contract is coming due either at the end of this year or the beginning of next year, right?
I guess. I mean, I saw What Culture posted a thing, but they're not very credible, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, we got a question in the chat.
All right, let's see it. Oh, Jonathan Messenger. Shout out to Jonathan, by the way. Took a Mike and JD show sign to Wrestle Dream. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, the man.
All the rest of you guys are jerks. You guys don't do that stuff, but Jonathan does. All right. So question for JD. What's the status of the hardcover copies of Gaijin?
So here's the problem is it's a package, right? We got a package with the program and with the hardcovers. I can't get the fucking program printed from Amazon. They keep dragging their feet. Every time I get it approved and put an order in, they keep canceling it. I'm saying there's problems with the order and I can't figure out why. I've been on the phone with these guys for weeks and it keep kicking me to the curb on this. So I've got the damn things. I'm just going to mail them. Like I'm just going to mail them and send guys out the programs later. That was my job this weekend is I'm just going to finally sign all of them and ship them out. I'm so upset because I had this really cool idea for this stupid program that everyone got the PDF one works just fine, but for some reason whenever I they printed the proof copy just fine, no problems, and then it was like, well, we can't take this. So I said okay, so I had to remake the whole damn thing from scratch, remade the whole thing from scratch, submitted it, approved, submit my orders, not approved. So I've never had this problem before. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to send out the hardcovers over the weekend, and then I'm just going to ship you guys the program when I get it done. It's going to cost me more money, but I'm mad. So it is what it is.
Well, I mean, that sucks that Amazon's doing that, but I'm glad that the people are going to get their stuff. They're excited to get the hardcover books.
It's gotten good reviews. I got a buddy of mine who texted me who really enjoyed it. Everyone who's read it really, really likes it. And when we do I'm going to do the official launch, I think in February. So it's going to hit Amazon for real. And then, I think we'll get some good pub out of it. Like I have not heard any, people might be just being nice to me, but I mean, like at the same time, like I think people really enjoyed it and really connect with this book. So I'm really proud of that. I think it's the best one I've written.
Yeah. I think Black Phoenix is a great character. I thought you did a great job with it and excited. I'm excited for this to blossom and possibly become more, maybe one day, maybe. We'll see.
We'll see.
Yeah, maybe. All right, yeah, guys in the chat, sound off. Until then,
thanks, sir.
Yep, WWE ID program. We talked about it last week. Well, they actually announced a few names today. They're the first class of the WWE ID program. So I just want to say, if you're a person that has the WWE ID logo, you should have to wear it on your chest like a scarlet letter, like in the indies, and that way we all know who the snitch is.
I like that.
Sorry, that's 1700s joke. My bad, guys.
Nathaniel Hawthorne humor.
Yeah. All right. So we got three names. We got Zeta Steel. She's 21. Her wrestling background includes stints with Japan's Marigold and Combat Zone Wrestling, where she was scouted despite a brief absence. She's also worked MLW, H2O, Northeast Promotions, building a brand. She has never been an AEW, Ring of Honor, or TNA. She is actually somebody when I did I needed content for Brace for Impact. So something that always usually plays well is like, who on the indie should TNA sign? And so I kind of got a list of names from different people that actually pay attention to the indies. And Zeta Steel was the first name on that list. They're like they have to sign her. She's 21. She's actually pretty decent in the ring. Still has, you know, she has room to grow, but, that's the first one. Bryce Donovan, a Creative Pro Academy, grad. That's, Creator Pro is Pat Buck, and I believe Brian Myers, right? Mm-hmm. That's where MJF and Chris Statlander and all them came out of. Mm-hmm. So he's been signed to WWE ID. And my favorite, honestly, my new favorite wrestler in the entire world, he is probably going to be in the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame day one, Cappuccino Jones. Cappuccino Jones is based in Oklahoma. He's rapidly become a popular figure in the regional indie circuits, known for his coffee-themed persona. He's already made a brief appearances with AEW and Ring of Honor, scouted from This Is Wrestling. So there you go.
I thought Yoshiki Inamura had also been put on that list.
He is not on WWE ID. He is just on excursion for NXT.
Oh, I was mistaken. I thought he had that WWE ID label on him.
No, I don't think so. I think he's just reported to the he reported to the Performance Center. These WWE ID kids are still working out of their own their gyms and stuff like that. They're going to go around the indies. They're just going to get, like, you know, a little bit of money, kind of like an NIL deal.
So they're gonna teach Inamura how to work, so he's as good as, like, Lash Legend and stuff like that, right?
That's yeah. You know what? What
a joke.
Yoshiki Inamura is on his fourth excursion. He just recently finished one in the UK, I thought.
Yeah, he's been around for he's been doing stuff at NOAH for a long time. He's I like Inamura quite a bit.
Me too. I thought he should have been their world champion. I like a lot of the guys that are there at NOAH, but the first time I saw this dude, I'm like, this guy is really freaking good. And then he kind of updated his character. He called himself Yoichi. He went on an excursion, had kind of a cool new gimmick. And he's really freaking good, and NOAH just never really gets behind him. They just end up sending him off to other places. And he's like 30. But he should have been their world champion already by now.
The only young guy they push in that company is Kiyomiya. Everybody else is 70. Because we gotta have Ironhead Fujiya just staring at people for 2 hours in matches.
You know, it's funny is I actually went to go check in on NOAH yesterday morning. I had some time. And so I pulled up the old Wrestle Universe app and I was like, just kind of scrolling. Cause the day before I had watched the newest New Japan, the Power Struggle show. So I was like, you know, let me check in on NOAH. I have not watched NOAH in a while. So I went to Wrestle Universe and I found out that Deadlock Pro Wrestling is there.
Really?
Have you heard of Deadlock Pro Wrestling?
Yeah, it's out in North Carolina, right?
Yeah. It's kind of a super indie out of North Carolina. They actually have really good production. It was wild. So I was like, you know what? Let me just throw on this Deadlock Pro show.
They're on Wrestle Universe?
It's on Wrestle Universe. It's kind of like, yeah. Just you run a search on there for Deadlock Pro, and it has a bunch of their events on there. They got another event coming up on here, I think, like next week. They have really good talent in that company, like talent that you've probably never heard before. I know we've all heard of Manders, but there's this other guy. I've seen Thomas Shire for years. He's been around the indies for years, but him and Manders formed a cowboy tag team. And I'm like, you know, we need more cowboy tag. Like, it's been a long time since we had some badass cowboys, like, you know, like Black Bart and all the other guys that were out there.
Smoking guns.
The smoking gun. They were cheesy cowboys.
They were cheesy cowboys.
I'm talking like 80s, like old school, beat your ass, like Stan Hansen type cowboys.
The Texas Outlaws.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're a really good tag team. They had this other girl in there called Hi Ann, who was on TNA a couple weeks ago.
She's
really
pretty good. I've seen her in AAW quite a bit. She's solid.
Yeah, she was really good. And then I watched a match with the Speedball Bailey versus this guy Cozone. What was his name? Cozone? Does somebody know what Cozone's name is? I actually tweeted about him. This match was so good. The crowd ate it up. It was in Charlotte, North Carolina, which I'm obviously very interested in what's going on in Charlotte these days. But it was in Charlotte, North Carolina, and this guy Cozone, he looks like a megastar. Yeah, it's LeBron Cozone. How did I miss LeBron? LeBron Cozone, but it's L.A. Braun. L.A. Braun Cozone.
I'm not familiar with this guy. I'm curious to check out his work.
He's got some size. He's like the head trainer of the school there. He's got a little bit of size on him. He's like, I mean, you don't have to be very big to be bigger than Speedball, but he's actually bigger than Speedball. And, dude, they tore the freaking house down. This match was amazing. So they actually have really good freaking talent in that company. Honestly, if they had like a TV deal, they would do really well. It's a really well-booked company.
You know what's fun is when Rich reached out to me after one of our shows and told me he agreed with me about Speedball Mike Bailey, my analysis of Speedball Mike Bailey. I was pretty happy when I heard that.
Oh, well, I'm going to tell you something that's going to make you really happy, and it's actually going to piss so many people off.
Go for it.
I like Speedball.
I know you
I
do.
Also find that his personality is a bore. He is not an interesting person.
No.
And I also think that he has been booked very well in TNA, commensurate with what he brings to the table.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't think anybody's ever booked him as well. He's been booked in TNA. He's been a featured act for 3 years. They ramp him up and then they cool him down. They ramp him up and they cool him down. He's been in co-main events. He's been in big marquee matches. He's been in match of the year candidates for 3 years in a row. Well, tonight on Impact, He's getting ready to finish up with the company. So he's on his way out. Tonight on Impact, they took the title off of him. He lost to Moose. And yeah. And once the internet actually finds out, nobody watches Impact, but once the internet finds out about this, that Moose was the one that defeated Speedball, boy, are they going to be pissed. And yeah, it turns out, you guys are also going to be not surprised. Like, you're going to actually act surprised, but this is not surprising. Moose and Speedball apparently had a fucking hell of a match. I'm waiting for your reaction, JD.
Oh, that's my reaction to a Speedball Mike Bailey match.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, Moose having a great match with Speedball. People are gonna say, "Oh, Moose can't have good matches." He can.
I don't buy that. I've never bought that. I like Moose. I know. As a wrestler, I've never said anything bad about it. I like Moose in Ring of Honor.
Yeah,
like, I think Moose is fine. He's a big power guy. Like, I think I'm still never gonna forgive him for working us when we interviewed him that one time. Like, I'm never gonna let that go. Yeah. But like, I think as a wrestler, he's fine. He had a better match with Kenny Omega than Rich Swann did.
Yeah, well, did I tell you? I got to tell you offline what happened with Rich Swann. I think I told you already. Yeah, you did.
That's why I took a chance to take a shot.
There's a reason. Like, the reason why Rich Swann's not, like, in the company right now, he's like on the sidelines, had something to do with also that match. So, like, it's been an ongoing issue for Rich, and I hope Rich gets better. But, but yeah, no, I think Moose has always been really good. The problem with Moose is, yeah, he had the DV arrest. And so, and I don't think he's really endeared himself to people afterwards. He hasn't really come out and been like apologetic, I would say, and kind of gracious or anything like that. He's just kind of like, I don't care what you think. Mm-hmm. And he has not endeared himself to people, but I've always thought that Moose can go in the ring, and especially when he's in there with a guy that's a really good worker like Speedball. And apparently both Moose and Speedball are saying it's probably their best match.
When you like CM Punk, you have to learn to excuse people's personal behavior when judging their work. Like,
yeah,
you have to compartmentalize when you're judging. Pro wrestlers are scum. Like, I'm sorry. As a guy who studies the history of pro wrestling, you can't like people. They're all rotten people. Like, you have to separate art from artist. And I think maybe I have an easier time doing that than most. Like, I don't feel the need to be buddies with the pro wrestlers. Like, they're just dudes that I watch. So, I mean, it's like, I don't want them to be murderers, but I mean, at the same time, like, I'm kind of like everybody to say, hey, that guy's good at his job. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and my thing is that, like, with Moose specifically, yeah, he kayfabed us, but when we did meet him, he was like really nice. He's a liar, but he's really nice, you know? And I know some people that have met him and have like know him a little bit socially, and they're all saying like, he's this like great guy, but he also has this past. And it's like, well, yeah, he was in the NFL. Is the guy not supposed to work anymore? You know what I mean? He didn't appear to be doing that stuff anymore. And hopefully he's learned and grown from it, but apparently he just has not, you know, really gained any fans because of that.
So I'll be honest with you, this is a JD Oliva thing. I have to believe people can change.
Same here.
Like, I have to. It's my job. Like, I'm a teacher. Like, we find kids, and like, you know, you by the time they get to us, a lot of times that they're too set in their ways. And like, it's sad to say about 14-year-olds, but it's the truth. But I mean, like, I have to. My job is to literally make people the best versions of themselves. And I've always kind of had that, where, like, you know, maybe I'm a bit naive, and I'd rather be a bit naive than jaded. Is I have to believe. I have to believe in the best of people. I have to believe that if someone is willing to change, that they can, that even people that made tremendous mistakes can be better. Like, did we all praise Steve Austin?
Yeah.
Right. Everybody praised.
Like, go ahead. Yeah, and Steve seems like he's like changed. On a great path in his life. You know what I mean? Like, the brother, I saw that brother giving his chicken a bath recently. Like, it's like, what's more adorable than Steve Austin on Instagram giving his chicken a bath?
Like, and that's the thing, is I have to believe that people can make really awful mistakes and change, like, and try to be better people. And like, and I believe that, I truly believe that if somebody makes huge mistake and feels legitimate remorse from it and works hard to get better, then that's okay. Like, I'm more of a, if something is a pattern of behavior, I think it's a problem. Like, you know, I just, I don't know, man. That's just me. That's how I get through the day. And maybe it makes me a bad person, but
no, I think that makes you a good person. And I think that a lot of people could learn a lesson there, because our society is so quick to just throw people away and demonize them when they're like that. You know what I mean? They say something stupid, they do something stupid, you know, and I'm not saying that like they shouldn't be held accountable. They should, but how long do you hold that person accountable? Right? Like when do you let them up for air? Right? When are they able to breathe again? The perfect example was, and I was talking about this. Well, we were talking about it. What Jay Briscoe said in that tweet the long, long time ago was disgusting, but then he apologized for it
profusely.
And he made amends, because there were some LGBTQ people in Ring of Honor. He went and made amends to them, and people never wanted to let that guy up. Like, that was a guy, like, executives, but then there were still fans, like, that did not want AEW to bring him in because of what he said. Mm-hmm. I'm like, the guy's got a family, right? Like, he never reached the mountaintops because this thing kept holding him back. And yeah, it was what he said, and he should have been held accountable. But how long do you continue to beat somebody up for something that they'd said on social media? How long do you continue to beat somebody up for them doing something, maybe even something violent, something horrific, when they were under the influence of alcohol? How long do you know what I mean? Like, especially when they were young, testosterone-fueled people. Eventually, you got to let somebody up, and you got to give them an opportunity to make themselves better.
I think young men are held to a degree of non-forgiveness in our culture. And I think we both have different views on this, because I don't think either one of us loves the person that we were when we were younger. Right.
I don't love the person who I was 6 years ago.
Yeah.
So I'm always constantly trying to be better.
I mean, I'll be honest. I don't really love the person I was 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a firm believer that life is ups and downs, and like, you can't judge a person by their best or their worst day. I'm a firm believer that if someone comes out of jail, they should be able to get a job. You know, if you've done your time, you've paid your debt to society, that the court said this is what you owe. I'm a firm believer that we should give people a chance. And if they fuck you again, okay, then they're done. But yeah. I mean, like, I don't want, again, I've never done anything really like bad. But I mean, like, I just, growing up with addicts and, you know, alcoholics, and just seeing people who don't take accountability for their actions and people who have taken accountability for their actions, I just judge them differently. And I firmly believe that if someone legitimately tries to get better, we should try to help them get better. I don't know. I just, I have a hard time holding things, especially like that, against people. If it's a repeat behavior, okay. Yeah. You're a piece of garbage. But I mean, like, I don't know. If someone seeks amends, and just seeking amends doesn't mean they have to like do it publicly in the court of public opinion. Like Jay Briscoe literally reached out to people that he offended and said, "I'm sorry. How do I get better?" And like, isn't that what we teach our children?
Yeah. Like, I always teach my daughter not to hold on to resentment, and to, like, you know, like when she does something bad, apologize, and when somebody does something bad to her, like, you know, it's like stupid stuff on the playground. It's like, well, if they apologize, you know, just forgive them, and then you guys can move on together. And that's kind of something that we preach to kids at an early age, but then we seem to forget it when we're adults, and we treat other adults like they have no path to redemption. We're not willing to give them that path. We're very self-righteous. And I'm telling you guys right now, there is a thin line between righteousness and self-righteousness.
Very.
And you're not letting somebody up to breathe because of their past, and they're not the ones living there anymore. You are. Chances are you're being self-righteous.
I think that for me personally, and this is just in the last year, the biggest thing I've had to work through is resentment. And for a long time, I ran on resentment. Like, my whole life was, I'm going to prove you wrong. Fuck you. You think I'm wrong? You think I can't do this? I'm going to prove you wrong. And after a while, that just becomes real. And I hate this phrase gets thrown out so much, but I'm going to use it because I think of a better word, toxic mindset. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And it just, if all you have is resentment, then you're just constantly looking for reasons to hang on to things, and you become unable to let go of things. And it starts to permeate other aspects of your life. And you find you hold resentment toward people who don't deserve that. And you find you hold resentment towards yourself because you don't know how to let those things go. And the hardest thing you can do is let go of your own resentments, not just to the people that you love, but to yourself. The hardest ones to let go are the ones you hold to yourself. So if you can't let go of your own resentment toward you, how are you going to let go of the resentments toward other people? Right. And I think we have to, God, we have to let those things go. I mean, I didn't expect you to do a Tony Robbins show. Right? I mean, like,
this has become a therapy session.
It is.
Yeah. You know what? What I always tell people is, like, you know, holding on to, and this is like, I didn't create this phrase, so it's something that's common in my community. But holding on to resentment is like drinking poison and hoping the other person's going to die. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Exactly. And so, and I think that's the best. That is the best way to put it. Yeah. JD, we did get a few questions. Everything pro wrestling, brother man, says, how does one eat breakfast like pro? Seriously, what's going on with the VKM breakfast story? I don't know what that is. I don't know what that means. Is there a story out there with Vince and his breakfast?
I mean, if anyone has a crazy ass breakfast, I'm sure it's Vincent Kennedy McMahon. So yeah. If there's something out there that I'm missing, please educate me.
Yeah. Ewan, a Patreon subscriber. I wish I had a little ding button. Ding for Patreon subscribers. Okay. Ewan says, regardless of whether you think she would win, what would you think about Gail Kim being on the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame ballot? Surely she has a better case than Trish. I think that would be tough to vote for her, but I do think that she has a better case than a lot of people in the modern category that were on there. She has a better case than Bray Wyatt. She has a better case than Asuka, I think, in the modern U.S. Asuka, you know, Asuka was never really like a mainstream star in Japan, and she came over to the States, and she's been a great star for WWE. I don't think she's been a top star for WWE. So I would say that Gail Kim probably has a better case than Asuka. And there's a few other people that I think she has a better case than. That said, unfortunately, a lot of her biggest success came in TNA, and TNA, like, much like the Ring of Honor case, unless you got the match quality, you're probably not going to get in, because TNA didn't, outside of a few events, they didn't do great business, and drawing power is part of the criteria. But she's hugely influential on women's wrestling. I will say that. Like, a lot of modern women, especially modern Asian women, look up to Gail, and they really see her as, like, as one of the great women's wrestlers of all time. Should she be on the ballot? I would be okay with her being on that ballot, because I think she has a better case than a lot of other people.
I think Trish had some drawing power, actually. Right?
I think she did. I don't know that she has a better case than Trish. She's a better wrestler than Trish, though.
I agree with that.
Yeah, and I think she was... Gail Kim was far more important to TNA than Trish was to WWE. I will say that. Like, because there for a while in TNA, their quarter hours when the women were on were way better than the men. Like, they were the top draw. If you're just taking a look at the quarters, and I think people forget about the fact that TNA did actually really good ratings back in the day, and Gail Kim was a huge part of that.
I never would have thought about that. I don't know how to feel about that. When I hear that, I don't think of Gail Kim as a Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Famer. But I also didn't vote for Becky Lynch, who has the best case of any female performer to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So I just don't feel I'm the right person to answer that, because, like, while I admire Gail Kim, I think her biggest flaw is that she just came around too early. Like, she was too ahead of time.
She was. You know?
If she was around now, like, if she was the same age as, like, Charlotte and Becky and them, I mean, she'd be a legend.
Yeah.
Right. Instead, well, she's just kind of, she's like we talked about in our Patreon show. Like, I think I compared her. Don't talk about Rich. I forget. Like, in the history of music, like, the MC5, like, really pioneered punk rock and heavy metal, but nobody knows who they are. But you don't get to Black Sabbath specifically, or like Led Zeppelin, without the influence of the MC5 and the Yardbirds. You know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes you need those influences to take their mark so that the next generation can build upon it. But in their era, they kind of get a little ignored. I think that's kind of Gail Kim's case.
I think so too. I would like to see her added to the ballot. That way we can at least start generating the discussion. And maybe somebody can do a think piece on it and write something just about how important she was. You know, but people, because she was in, like, the majority of her success came in TNA, people are not going to take that seriously, because TNA was so demonized by the publications as just being terrible. And they were so far below WWE, despite the fact, you know, that they were successful for a lot of years, but they just were never really a challenger brand to WWE. WWE was just always so far ahead. They never came close. And nobody really values what they were able to do with business, because of their ticket sales and the pay-per-views were never all that high, but they did really good ratings. And I think ratings power, drawing power is drawing power. And Gail Kim drew some good ratings for them back in the day. So, and she's hugely influential. I think she's got a case. I don't know if it's a strong case, but I think that she's got a case. But there is, with among Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame voters, there is a TNA bias. There's also a Ring of Honor bias, to where if you're the bulk of your career came in either of those two promotions, it's going to be difficult for you.
Mike, neither of us voted for Samoa Joe.
No, and Samoa Joe's in the Mike Gilbert Hall of Fame, but you know what I mean? But yeah. I value drawing power too.
And this is what I'm talking about. Is I don't feel like I can have a legitimate conversation about Gail Kim if you and I will not put Samoa Joe in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? And the only way Gail Kim gets in there, and I'm not suggesting that Dave does this, is if he separates out a women's bracket.
Yeah, Dave will never do that.
No. And I don't think that he should. I think that it should be equal. That's true equality. Here's what Everything Pro Wrestling was getting at. So TKO's Mark Shapiro spoke with Sherman 4949. I don't know who that is. Sounds who is Sherman 49? Alex Sherman of CNBC. Sorry, it was asked about Vince McMahon. Said he's got some litigation he's working through, and frankly, he wants the privacy and the time to work through it, which is great because in the meantime, we're going to keep building a TKO and WWE. And then there's this picture here. Said Shapiro says, I had breakfast with him a few weeks ago just to check in. Okay, that's news. That's what he's talking about. Been a long time. Haven't heard from him at all. Obviously, the series on Netflix came out, and I wanted to see kind of where he was at. By the way, he could have been more cooperative. He couldn't have been nicer. I mean, he was a total pro breakfast, if you will. It's a one-to-one get-together. Okay, so this guy Shapiro's having breakfast with Vince McMahon. They're not, like, you know, I think it's a real possibility that Vince McMahon's, the case against him just goes away. And do you think they bring this guy back?
Nothing. Mike, there's one thing I've learned as being a professional wrestling fan low these past 30 plus years. Nothing is out of the ordinary.
Yeah. Nothing is out of the, but I feel like that if they did try to bring him back, that would be severely detrimental to the company. At least I think so, but I'll be honest. I don't think anybody really cares. I really don't. I have no faith that anybody really cares about that stuff.
No, I'll tell you what's going to happen. If one day in some arena, Omaha, Nebraska, let's say, you're going to hear no chance, chance in hell. And all those fucking WWE gurus will start doing all their bowing stuff and acting like Vince McMahon's the greatest thing in the world because they're a company that turned there. These are fans that turn their back on racism. They're the fans that turn their back on child abuse and rape. And everything else that's awful in the world because they just like WWE wrestling. Like I had a friend that went out of his way to defend Alfred Kanawha this week. And, you know, I had to kind of like say, hey man, you're wrong on this. This is a bad guy for this reason.
I talked to him too.
You know, and I just, when you like that place enough, you just tend to ignore a lot of the things that make you uncomfortable about it.
So the thing is, it's not even so, I do feel like they ignore some stuff. I think that they just don't think it's true. Like they have got it into their heads. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And you know, and I don't want to talk about the election, but there are so many allegations against Donald Trump and he overwhelmingly won the popular vote. Those people don't think that he did any of those things. No. They don't.
A lot of
I don't think that, like, you know, the rape allegations and stuff like that. I just don't think they think it's true. I think they think it was all like media bullshit. And it was trumped up charges by a biased, system against him. And none of it was true. And look, and we've seen allegations against politicians. All of a sudden when they win, like those things go away. It happened to Joe Biden in 2020. So that stuff tends to happen. So I still think those people think that it's actually true. And that's why they actually support Vince and they support WWE. It's like, all these people just want WWE's money.
That's what I said. They just turn their back on it because it's an uncomfortable truth. And it's very easy to say, that's not real. Those are haters. They're just haters. They're not serious. They're just, it's disgusting to me. And especially if you're going to, and then, just that guy in particular. So, I don't know.
Yeah. Alfred Kanawha is, he can't be defended. He can't be laughed off as a troll anymore. He is active participant in a cover-up. and a smear campaign and a misinformation campaign.
And he doesn't even get money from them.
I don't know that that's true.
I think our bosses said that they don't get money. He doesn't get money, but I don't know. I can't say for sure.
I can't say for sure that he doesn't. Honestly, if you see me shilling that hard for somebody, a specific company, and defending them that hard, it's because they're paying me. I am not like people like I have been accused of being on TNA's payroll. I was like, guys, have you ever listened to my show? Most of those people hate me, right? Like, I am not like just because I say nice things about them, you got to listen to all the bad things I say about them. TNA Fan Nation hates me, right?
TNA wrestlers hate you in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I'm blocked by half of them for saying that I wish Jordan Grace would be a jobber because in a joke that I made on Twitter. Right? Mm-hmm. A lot of those people don't like me. So, but if all of a sudden I'm like saying nothing but nice things about a singular company, it's because I'm on the payroll. It's because I signed my WWE ID contract finally.
We can be bought. We don't have any scruples. We both have kids to feed, so we can be bought. Yes.
Yeah. Let me see. Did we have any other questions? Nope. I think that was it. But look, we got through all the news that there was. There wasn't a ton of news. Nope. And I told my Blackwater story.
Dude, that's worth the show's worth it for that alone today.
Yeah. If there's no wrestling stories that are out there, I'll just start telling war stories and people fall asleep. But I think that's gonna do it for us this week. Good. Unless anybody's got anything else, man. I think we're good. It's a little bit early for you. You can probably go watch TV or something.
It's almost 11 o'clock, man. I'm going to try this new crazy thing on Thursday nights called sleep.
Sleep. Yes. Okay. Well, we'll still try to go early, a little bit earlier, at least during this portion of the daylight savings time.
Yeah, let's do it.
Probably until April. And then who knows, maybe next, maybe by July, I'll be on the East Coast, in the Southeast there. And working, and I'll be a fan of Deadlock Pro Wrestling out of Charlotte.
You're going to go work for the Crockett's.
I would love that. That would be so cool. If I end up moving to Charlotte, which is kind of like that's where it's looking, I'm going to start going to those Deadlock Pro shows, and then I'm going to try to take over the book. So be like, and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to just get ideas from Muse, and then I'm just going to give it to them and tell them that I came up with it. That would be the move, I think.
It would not be the first time someone has stolen the John Muse idea and passed it off.
It's very lucrative business practice, I've heard.
I've seen it happen on a couple of occasions.
But all right, guys, that is going to do it for us this week on the Mike and JD Show. Please give us a like, comment, and subscribe, and head over to patreon.com/themikeandjdshow. We'll try to get an overtime topic coming out here pretty soon. JD and I will spitball some stuff. Maybe we got to think of something classic. Like, you know, it's 2024. It's coming to an end. You know, maybe there's something like, you know, 30 years ago or 40 years ago or 20 years ago that happened. Who knows? We'll think of something to watch or something to comment on. Maybe there's a big news story. Maybe there's a topic down the pike, or maybe you guys have a suggestion for us. There's like some old school you want us to cover. Let us know. If not, there were some UFOs over Beijing. I'll just talk about that. So we'll more to come. We'll see. But all right, guys, that's going to do it for us this week. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-made, no rain. From the track when we unite and spit, this isn't A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-made, no rain.
Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.